Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today on Anatomy of a Movie, we return to the DC Extended Universe with David Ayer's Suicide Squad. We discuss story, production, and of course, reception. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's Suicide Squad, a highly anticipated movie from Warner Brothers, and today on Anatomy of a Movie, we have Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
That's right, and if you're a fan of Popcorn Talk, specifically DC movie news, you might know her, or if you ever caught an Anatomy of a Movie, or just love AfterBuzz TV, or in fact Screen Junkies, or The Tomorrow Show, where is this girl not at? Yeah. Roxy Stryer.
I'm so excited to be back with you guys. I have not done one of these in a while, and I'm glad that you brought me in for this one. You guys shunned me away. You didn't want me anymore. But when it comes to DC, you pulled me back in, so at least I have some value.
There you go. Absolutely.
So valuable.
We have to get an expert. I like the cross-pollinate.
Yeah, I do love that. And I'm excited because this is even more in-depth, and we get to break it down. I can't wait to hear your guys' opinions going into this because we come in with varying degrees of knowledge of DC Comics, so it'll be really exciting to see how you guys felt.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Couple of quick things before we fully dive in. Number one, it is very spoiler-filled for those who are joining us for the first time, so we assume that you've seen the movie. If you don't mind the spoilers, you've been warned. Second, you can always download our rundown in the description box so that way you can follow along with what we got. Also, we are going to approach it from a filmmaking standpoint, so yes, we will talk about story and everything else, but at the same time, we don't go into the DC stuff as much. That's why we have DC movie news. Speaking of which, our own Mike Kalinowski did short pieces called Character Corner, where he highlights the origin stories of each of these characters from Suicide Squad. So, again, this is not the end-all, be-all show. There's plenty of moving parts here at Popcorn Talk to dive deeper. That being said, let's start with you, Marissa. Overall thoughts?
Overall, you know, I was actually pretty excited to watch this film. I think it is a great star-studded cast and loaded literally with a bunch of great talent. So I was really excited to go see it. And, you know, it's always fun watching stories where there's so many different types of characters and they're thrown together and you kind of want to know what crazy awesomeness comes out of it. I thought that was this movie. I thought it was very fun, energetic. There was humor in it, and, you know, it was fun. And we'll get to reception, but I don't think it was nearly as bad as what people are saying. It had its moments that were really fun, and it had its moments that could have been better. But overall, I don't think it was a terrible movie. It was actually fun and entertaining.
I saw this movie with a bunch of critics because, thanks to Phil, I went to a screening of it, and the theater was very low energy and quiet, and I think that affected my viewing experience because, as we will speak about later, not the critics' absolute favorite film of all time. But for me, I feel like I brought a lot of backstory into this film, and because of that, I was able to use my imagination and make up all the things that they left out. Two-thirds of this movie were very strong for me. A third of it, not so much. And I think there were small changes they could have made in order to make this a great movie. But for me, it was just good.
Yeah, I would feel overall the same way. I wanted this to be a lot of fun. And I think overall it was. It just it seemed a little bit too simplified for me. I wanted a little bit more action, things like that. You know, I will commend them on the fact it's always very difficult to write a story about bad guys because you have to make the good guys be worse than the bad guys. And I think through Amanda Waller, they actually accomplished that very well. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them credit there. You know, and it's one of those things that the unfortunate part is I was rooting for it to be better than it actually was. And that's the tough part about this because I do want to see these great movies. And the thing I question myself about, this isn't a knock on the movie at all, is like you, I wonder if I don't have all the knowledge, because for years, you know, I've seen the 1960s Batman, I've seen obviously Nolan's iteration of it, I've seen the bad Bat suit with the nipples and everything. I've seen it all, right? And I wonder if I didn't have that knowledge, how this movie would come across.
Hmm.
You know? And I thought overall it was just too music video-y. It literally looks like some of the stuff that I would have edited in high school just to practice editing, where I just throw everything against the kitchen sink just to mm-hmm. see what I'm able to do. you know, between the graphics, the music, you know, the cuts and whatnot. And I thought Jared Leto, to me, was one of the better parts, and they had a lot more footage of him that they cut out. I wanted to see that a little bit more.
Okay.
So, there you have it. That's my thoughts. But let's start with the development of it. You know, I mean, we know DC's trying to catch up to Warner Brothers, and I think that might be part of the problem, is that they're just trying to play catch-up too fast, and so their development process was somewhat non-existent.
Right. When we announced our slate, you know, I don't like to say that we're trying to catch up to Marvel, because I know that that is a popular opinion, but I think that DC is clearly doing their own thing and taking the smart things that Marvel is doing and trying to incorporate that. That's why we do have all of these changes on an executive level being made. But DC announced their slate, and I was a little confused. This was a couple of years ago. At the very end of that slate, we've got Shazam. Now, we know nothing about what's going on there, that it really, other than The Rock being cast, which people don't even know what's happening with that movie. I'm not sure that DC had any idea what they were doing when they were like, okay, we're going to first do BVS, then we're going to do Suicide Squad. These are all the things. Let's lay out till 2020. Well, why don't we try to just figure out what the next movie should be and do a good job with that and then work from there? But because Marvel announced their slate, DC felt obligated to do so, and that rushed us into development, I feel.
Yeah, but to be fair, I didn't even know this was part, like this tied in that much to Batman v Superman. I thought mm-hmm. it was more of a standalone, to be honest. But, you know, I don't mind it. I actually didn't in that sense, but. Yeah.
That had been discussed earlier on, but then when we knew that Batman was going to make cameo appearances, obviously we knew we were close enough by that we were all going to be on the same Earth and same yeah. timeline.
Yeah, I don't agree you need to necessarily have to know what all happened in BVS, because I think at this point there's been so many movies and just television shows of Batman's story that we all just kind of know who Batman is. And when we saw Batman have his little appearances during this movie, we can understand, like, oh, that's what Batman does. He gets the bad guys. And we didn't need a story for him in this movie.
Well, I don't, for me, and not to veer off too much, but it's not even necessarily Batman. It's the fact that Superman's dead, right? And if you didn't see Batman v Superman, you're like, Superman's dead?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Since when?
It's that, and it's also the post-credits, the mid-credits scene that you would be confused about, I think. But they did give you the knowledge. It's not like they never said Superman's dead. So even though you might be like, what? What just happened there? How did Superman die? That would only encourage you to go see BVS, because that's a wild thing. So at least they filled people in on what the important things that they missed.
Yeah. And I liked how it actually opened that creative door to be like, hey, since our biggest iconic good guy is gone, that allowed the bad guys to rise.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and David Ayer, he was drawn to this because this is like his Dirty Dozen. He liked that side of it, and he felt that this universe, DC, was just so rich, and there was so many things to explore. And so he was excited about it. But it is reported that he had about basically 6 weeks to put a script together before they went into production.
Which, that's not a long turnaround at all.
It's not enough.
Yeah. Some people can't even write a first draft in 6 weeks, let mm-hmm. alone a polished version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a big fan of David Ayer, and I think there was a lot of pressure on him, especially after Zack Snyder got completely torn apart after both of his movies. So after you see what happens to Zack Snyder, it's got to be a little nerve-wracking for David Ayer going into the DC universe, where I feel like he kind of went in one hand tied behind his back and just trying to figure all of this out. I'm a huge fan of his work. I think he's very talented. Do I think this was his best work? No. Do I think he was giving the resources to make this his best work? Maybe not. Although he publicly has said that he was in charge of this, he was able to do everything he wanted, that WB wasn't giving him a lot of crap as they were with Snyder, and Snyder came out and said that. So none of us really know the whole story. It would be interesting to be a fly on the wall and know how much of this production was David Ayer, how much was WB, how much was anybody else who was on the project.
Yeah, I mean, he says that, but I don't know if I fully buy it. You know, it's one of those things, like, there's so much money put into it. That yeah, they're gonna have their hand in it. And the problem is, what's nice about this movie overall, it is a standalone piece. Like I think as this continues, you can see the rest of the movies, and you don't have to necessarily, while this ties into them, again, it's very much like you can watch this on its own. And so even if it was slightly different, I think they let him have his thing that way. You know what I'm saying? Because unlike Batman v Superman, they didn't have to set up the Justice League. They didn't have to set everything up. But I don't fully buy it.
Yeah, I don't know if I do either. And John Ostrander, who wrote the Suicide Squad comic books, has been vocal after the movie came out. He seems very bitter. He was like, listen, the critics don't like this movie because they didn't want to like this movie, and this market is super saturated, and they just don't want to like superhero movies anymore, so that's why they gave this a bad review, and he's been really loud about being pissed off about this. But the counter to that is, okay, if critics don't like comic book movies because they just don't want to like them anymore, then why is Marvel doing so well with the critics?
Yeah. I mean, and that's also... And that must be frustrating for Ostrander as well, because David Ayer is a big fan of the Ostrander series and whatnot, and he took a lot of that creative inspiration for this film. So to have David get criticized on his end and also in parallel with Ostrander himself, it's like that's not good for both of them.
Right.
Even though they put... Granted, they only had 6 weeks, but, you know, they work hand in hand together for this film. And it's just unfortunate to put that much work in just to get criticized so much.
Although the fans are speaking very highly of it so far. So I think that they're finding a saving grace in that, even though the critics are knocking this down. A lot of the fans are speaking up and saying, hey, we love this. You guys did it. Good work. So at least they do have that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope there's a lesson to be learned there. Like, it happened with X-Men Apocalypse, where they weren't given the time that they needed. Obviously, it's at least in terms of the critics, and we have yet to see how it fully pans out in terms of box office. It sort of happened with this. You know, you can see the shortcomings because of time. And I really hope, like, I'm good with, studios making these types of movies. It's not like I'm telling them, don't make these. But just realize that no matter what you can, how much money you throw at something, the one thing you can't solve for is just creative thinking and time. And so I do want that to kind of, like, let's stop with all these deadlines. Like, we have to, like, get this, pump this out that fast. And just take a little bit of time with it.
It's very challenging because nowadays you need to pick the date of your movie so far in advance to say, hey, guys, that's our date. We're claiming this date. So that Marvel doesn't put a movie there, so that Disney doesn't put a movie there, so that these huge, huge tentpole films don't go on your date. So it's kind of like calling dibs on something before you even have something to put there. Mm-hmm. You just have to say, all right, in 3 years from now, on this date, that's when this is coming out. Well, what?
Well, okay, take the best Batman series, arguably, with Christopher Nolan's, right? How many years was each one of those separated by?
Very far apart. Those were way further apart than...
No, it's Christopher Nolan, and he's a huge draw, I get that, but, you know, he had the time to really do what he wanted.
He did, mm-hmm. And there also wasn't the messiness of pulling in other movies that were tied. You know, that was a trilogy, it was set to be a trilogy, and they said, okay, run with this. But he also had goodwill in the studio's eyes because the first movie did very well. The second movie did even better, you know. He just kept building that. And for DC, I think that they're trying to switch it up. Maybe are trying to do what Marvel's doing, chasing after something that might not exist. I don't know.
I just felt the biggest thing for me, I wanted this more of a comedy, and I guess it just wasn't, you know. Like, it relied too much on the actual techniques of the movie to make the humor versus, like, just letting the characters be funny.
How'd you feel about that? Did you want it to be funnier?
No, not really, because I didn't expect this to be a comedy. I expected this to be a darker film because we had dark villains in it and darker storylines and a lot of violence as well. So I didn't go in thinking, oh, I'm going to laugh a lot. I went into seeing, like, hey, this is going to be an action comedy or an action-filled kind of movie.
There was a lot of criticism about people wanting this to be more funny or less funny. And it's interesting because, again, comparing to Marvel, which has a lot of humor, DC people make fun of, because everybody thinks that there's somebody standing over at DC saying, guys, we can't be funny. We're dark and gritty. We're dark and gritty. We can't have humor in this, which obviously is not true. But they are a darker, grittier world. That's the world that they have created. And when they went back to do reshoots on Suicide Squad, rumors took off that they were going to film things because they were funnier. They were going to put in the jokes. That's what they were trying to do, to compete with Marvel, to make it ha-ha funny. That's not why they did the reshoots. As a filmmaker, as
you just always need reshoots, especially at this scale.
You need reshoots sometimes. So they went to do those reshoots. But now it's interesting because we have characters like Will Smith who are funny in this, and then we have characters that are very serious. People are like, well, pick a tone. If you're going to be funny, you have to be funny. Why can't we just live in a world where sometimes it's dark and sometimes it's funny? Kind of like the actual world we live in, where some people are funny and some people aren't.
Well, to me, the reason why I thought this was going to be a little bit more funnier than it was is, yes, I think Batman and Superman and those guys have to be a little bit more serious. There's, you know, there's a lot at stake. But if you're the bad guys, it's all a joke to you. The whole concept of world domination, at this point, I think we can laugh about, and especially if you're like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do world domination.
I think that, though, with... So, go ahead, Marissa.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's like, I felt that the story was, or just the movie itself was rather darker. It had darker content, darker characters and whatnot. And there were small moments of levity. And that's where the comedy came in. But it wasn't stretched throughout, like, oh, my God, we're going to be laughing every 5 minutes. Like, if a squad full of comedians is not that kind of movie.
Right. But it is a good point that they don't care. They're the bad guys. So it is all kind of a joke to them. Which I do think they depicted in Harley Quinn's character, who obviously did whatever she wanted, whenever she wanted. Same thing in Jai Courtney's character in Boomerang, who is just cracking the beers and is like, all right, I'll go along with you guys or not, whatever. Will Smith's character did the same thing. Croc, who they didn't do it as well with, because we'll talk about his character in a little bit, but he had... They tried to put some humor in him, too. So I do think we still got that sense of...
I think he had the funniest line in the entire movie.
Don't say it.
Why not?
Don't tell me that you thought that line was good.
I thought it was amazing.
I hope you're not talking about what I'm thinking you're talking about.
I'm good looking.
Okay, that one. Okay. I thought you were going to say the BET one.
No.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, okay. That was fine. I like her. He is the weirdest one-liners. Okay, well, not enough about his character, but I do think that they did try to put humor in the right moments and show that these characters, they are the bad guys and they don't really care that much.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask a basic question. Who did you guys gravitate to most?
I loved El Diablo. Not just because of Jay Hernandez. Uh-huh, I know, Phil, you're looking at me.
No, okay, Jay Hernandez was just in Bad Moms.
I'm a big fan of Jay Hernandez.
Me too.
For multiple reasons.
And that character was amazing.
El Diablo was a big surprise to me, and that's why I liked it. Because I don't really know these characters. I don't know the background stories. That's why you're here, Roxy. But I wasn't really familiar with El Diablo, where he came from, what happened to him, and whatnot. And then when he was slowly revealing his backstory, and I felt like, hey, this is a damaged guy. There's something deeper within. And then we found out his story. It seemed like more real, because there are people who struggle with family issues, depression, and whatnot. And I felt that was very realistic. And his emotions and how he went into situations and why he was so withdrawn back and withheld sometimes, I felt that was very real. And then he had his moments to shine and very redemption, you know, redemptive and whatnot. I was like, this is a really cool character.
I completely agree. And he was a massive surprise, because going into this, everybody was like, Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jared Leto, Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jared Leto.
Right.
Nobody was talking about the actor or the character. Nobody was mentioning him. He was in marketing a little bit, but probably as much as Slipknot was. And we all know that Slipknot made it for about 13 seconds of the film. Then got blown up. So it was like, okay, I didn't know that El Diablo was going to be this important in the story. When we started spending a little more time with him, I thought, where are we going with this? And I loved the place that we went. It was unfortunate how he ended up, because I don't feel like that was maybe necessary. I wanted to keep him around. Just because now we know he's in this universe, and now we know he's not.
And now he's gone.
Right, and he was one of my favorites. But my absolute favorite was Margot Robbie's portrayal of Harley Quinn, because there were very high stakes here. I had incredibly high expectations going in, and there was almost no way she could match them, but she did. And I thought she did an amazing, amazing job. I love the way they wrote her character. I thought that she knocked it out of the park. She was weird. She was quirky. She was hot. She was disgusting. She was her own woman in her own character and not a female role model, because people keep saying that, like, oh my God, hashtag relationship goals with her and the Joker. Guys, no.
Well, like, if they got married and actually had kids and settled down, then yes, perhaps.
But, like, come on. That's not what this movie was trying to say. But I love that they made this partially her story, and as an independent woman and all of her weird quirks, I thought she did a really, really strong job.
I'll give a lot of credit to the fact I thought her performance was really strong, but at the same time, if other people didn't play to her in the correct way, it wouldn't have been believable, and I thought everyone else around her treated her like she was, you know what I mean? They reacted genuinely.
Absolutely.
And so I give a lot of people credit for that, starting with, this was one of the minor characters, but I did enjoy the guard, or whatever you want to call him, in the prison. The sadistic bastard that he was.
He was your favorite?
He wasn't my favorite, but I did enjoy him because he, right off the bat, he's very funny. He's like, she's hot, but that's a whole lot of crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. He played well to her. Yeah. I agree with that.
The biggest surprise.
And to Deadshot as well.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest surprise for me, though, was Enchantress, because I was not expecting. Like, it was a whole left turn in terms of story, character, and everything else. I thought we were
in a good way?
For me, I think that was the biggest knock I would have on it, is I would have preferred, like, let's go after the Joker, you know, rather, and then let's have the Enchantress on our side, but to like, and maybe it is to that point, like, we just got Apocalypse, and X-Men, and he's kind of that sort of take over the world type of being, that it just felt too much of the same.
I think it was good that they didn't go over, you know, and take out the Joker, because I felt that storyline has happened too many times in television and all the other movies. You see Joker, he's the main villain that they're always after. So I'm glad that they switched it to someone completely different.
Yeah, I have thoughts on what both of you guys just said. Starting with Enchantress, remember when I talked about the one third of the movie that was not good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she made up like 90% of that.
Mm.
Oh my God, did they butcher this character. I don't know what they did with her voice. I don't know what they did with that weird dance she did. June Moon, who Cara Delevingne did a fine job with, but was very boring. And then as Enchantress, it just became this weird thing. I was so excited when I saw that we were going to have a female villain. They kept that under wraps really well, where our big bad was going to be a female. That doesn't happen very often. How cool. And then was just majorly let down. I don't know whether it was her performance or a combination of her performance, the editing, her brother, which was so strange and unnecessary the way they did that. Just, I can't believe that they decided to put that on screen. But I don't wish it was Jared Leto. I don't wish it was the Joker as our big bad. Because, like Marissa said, we have seen that time and time again, and I think that they have bigger plans for this Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we will talk about how much they left on the cutting room floor of the Joker, but this is somebody who is going to be in the next Batman movie, is going to be a villain for a long time. It's the Joker. He's probably the biggest comic book villain that there ever was. He's definitely one of the top ones. So we have time to play with him. In this movie, in Suicide Squad, I loved that he wasn't that big of a part of it, because this is Harley's story. It's not the Joker's story. And if he comes in, then we don't get Harley's story as much. So I wanted him to take a backseat. I was glad we didn't see him that much, even though I did like his portrayal of the Joker. I thought Jared Leto did a really good job, but we'll get more of him.
So let me ask you guys this. As you guys are talking, I started thinking about, what if the Enchantress, like, what if instead of going after the Enchantress, there was another mission that they had to go on? And it could be small, that's fine, but she's really responsible for disseminating the Suicide Squad from the inside out. You know what I mean? Because she's on the inside, but obviously she has her own agenda in worse ways than obviously what the rest of the Suicide Squad
I could be into that, as long as she didn't blow up like Jigglypuff and do like her little dance that we call the potty dance, because she had her all her little like poopy villains going on. So if we played the whole thing differently and somehow she manipulated people from the inside out, I could be into that. But they would have to change so many things about her.
Yeah, I had serious issues with the Enchantress. Like, I think it's obviously awesome to have a female villain, but I don't know if it was like a miscast.
But to me, the brother was the villain, not her. She just kind of set things off.
I know, but the thing is just, I was trying to, throughout the whole movie, I was trying to figure out where Enchantress fit in with the Suicide Squad. If she was actually originally a part of them and then turned on them, or like just literally went AWOL and went her own ways and just tried to destroy the world. And I don't know, and I didn't like the portrayal, and I think it got hokey at the end, especially with like the whole voice dub, and I'm like, I don't know if I should even take this character seriously because she really isn't that threatening anymore.
It felt like a joke to me.
It was.
It felt like a joke, and I didn't know whether that's what they were trying to go for. I don't think so, but...
I think we were supposed to be afraid of her, and I really wasn't.
Mm-mm. Not at all. I definitely wasn't either. Not their strongest villain choice.
Yeah. And I don't want to, like, knock Cara Delevingne, but I've seen her in other movies, and I don't think this was the best role for her. Because I think she's too much of a recognizable face that it took me out of the film. And I was like, okay, she's there.
Out of all people, she's the most recognizable that took you out?
Yeah, well...
As opposed to Will Smith, Margot Robbie, or anyone of them?
I went to go watch this film and wasn't expecting Cara Delevingne at all.
Huh. Yeah, it's challenging when you go from being a model, and it is just about... what you look like to...
Well, she was in Paper Towns.
Right, but then going to
be... Did you see that movie? It was bad.
That's what I was going to say. Okay. To then going to be an actress where you need to not be yourself. You need to be somebody else. And I don't want to completely bash her because a lot of things were wrong with this character. And maybe it wasn't her.
Yeah.
That was making it so bad. Maybe she was part of the problem, but not the whole problem. But I haven't seen her in anything yet where she wowed me. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen her in anything yet where she even okayed me. So
apart from Paper Towns, what is there that she's been in? I don't remember. Mm-mm. Nothing.
No.
Nothing really else.
Oh, okay. So then just Paper Towns.
But right. Her portrayal in Paper Towns wasn't even that good because I didn't like her. It was so mundane.
It didn't transcend it. Yeah.
And I don't think she has the... granted, she's a model. She's gorgeous. But I don't know if she has the acting capability to get, like, emotionally in-depth with a character, to get the audience to actually feel for a character and draw out a storyline.
I also think that she, and I don't personally know her, I think that she probably has a challenging time getting along with people sometimes and following instructions. We've seen her go on many talk shows and insult the hosts, walk off of set. She's got... attitude, and as somebody who has attitude, I understand that I don't know her, and maybe she is a perfectly great girl, and maybe she just has some spunk to her. But from what I have seen, I'm picturing David Ayer like trying to tell her something, trying to say, mm-hmm. okay, here's what you have to do here, here's what, or an acting coach or anything. And I just picture her being like, I do what I want. That's what I do. So I could be wrong, but that's the vibe I get from her.
Yeah, I don't know if she has the acting range. For us.
Well, let me ask this. Did you guys buy the love story? Because I thought if they got one thing wrong right with them, I thought at the very least Joel McKinnon, Rick Flagg was able to sell the love story a little bit.
I do have something to say about this. And I think a lot of films, not just this one, but we talked about it time and time again on all of our anatomies and whatnot, there's always a great difference with age difference between casting of the male and female. Joel Kinnaman, who's in his mid-30s, and then Cara Delevingne, who's in her early 20s. And I think the age gap is just so far that I could not believe this relationship at all. And I don't want to keep bashing on Cara. I don't mean to sound like that at all. But every time they were together, I didn't feel like they had chemistry at all. Therefore, there was a disconnect, and I couldn't believe this relationship.
I didn't have a problem with the age gap, and I do feel like Joel Kinnaman, in that one scene in the bed when they were lying there, they did a good job, and I felt a connection. As June Moon, Cara didn't do a bad job. So I think that the character was a little weak and lame, and there wasn't that much to her. And as Rick Flagg, I didn't feel like there was that much to Joel Kinnaman's character. So when you take these two characters, neither of which are my favorite character in the movie, and you ask me to care about their relationship, care about Cara Delevingne, pun intended. But if you ask me to care about it, it's challenging because I don't even care about them really when they're separate. So now you put them together and it's like, all right, I get it. You're trying to tell me they're in love. Fine. Yeah. All right, sure.
I will say I thought the reveal of all of that was – that's something that they could have fixed. It's either have it be dramatic irony and let us know from the get-go because we pretty much knew, or just hold it off until Deadshot confronts Rick Flagg. Because like, oh, we got like that smallest amount of proportion of what wasn't already filled in. Like we knew she was the one responsible. We knew pretty much the entire story with the exception of like she took the bomb or something.
Do you guys think this would have been a more believable love story or you would have been more interested if instead of being Joel Kinnaman, it was Tom Hardy who was originally cast and no longer was in it based on a couple of things, The Revenant and his first reading of the script in which he said he didn't love the characters. The character, or that's how rumor has it. Do you think that Tom Hardy would have done a better job?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think there was any saving Rick Flagg's character or their relationship here?
I didn't have a problem with Rick Flagg's character. I don't know what everyone else is saying, but honestly, he was one of my better characters that I actually liked watching throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I will say this. Like, yes, Tom Hardy is a phenomenal actor, but you know what? Believe it, so is Joel McKinnon. Like, he's capable Kinnaman, of great. Yeah. Yeah. He's great. He can do great work, and so you know what, I don't mind giving him a shot. And to be honest, like I said, I don't think he did that bad of a job.
It's interesting because on the DC panel we've been very split, and I am a big Joel fan. I think he did a really good job, but a lot of the panel feels like he gave the worst performance in the movie, and it's so crazy how people can have such drastically different opinions because I'm watching the same movie and I'm looking at him, and I think he did a good job. I think he worked with the material he was given. So people can just see different things sometimes.
Yeah, I kept watching the film, and I was like, wow, he's getting a lot of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, good for him. And Phil and I, we did the rewatched The Killing show, which Joel was a big character in that show. And like, I think he did a great job acting in that film. Saw him in RoboCop, and I thought he was great in that. So, like, I'm glad that he was given a role that he could really shine against so many people who are already big names.
Right. Yeah, and he had to keep all of them together. I mean, you know, just psychologically, can you imagine, like, you're the leader for Will Smith and Margot Robbie and Jay Hernandez and everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Deadshot, because we'll be remiss if we don't actually talk about Deadshot.
I loved him. I loved him. I thought Will Smith did an awesome job. I was really nervous after the trailers that he was just going to be totally Will Smith, Will Smith, Will Smith. And I thought he gave this one of the top three performances in the movie. I was so pleasantly surprised with his chemistry and Margot Robbie's chemistry, and they kept me engaged for most of the movie. I thought Will did an awesome job as Deadshot.
I agree. Like, I love Will Smith. He's a phenomenal actor. We know he can do comedy. We know he can do drama. And he has great comedic timing with his lines and whatnot. And he's already worked with Margot Robbie in Focus, so we know they already had built chemistry there. So he was fun throughout the whole movie. Even the storyline with Deadshot always wanting to be with his daughter and whatnot, completely believable. And that was something that, like, kept him going throughout the whole thing and kept motivating him. I believed it. I believed every single aspect of his character. And I think Will, because he's so freaking talented, he hit every single mark.
I think it's talent, but also, I mean, what people don't always think, he's a hard worker. Like, back in the days of Fresh Prince Bel-Air, he would literally memorize everyone's lines. Because that's the way he, you know, otherwise he wouldn't understand the script and he wouldn't know how to, like, when to say what he needed to say. And so for this, the fact that, like, he trained with Navy SEALs and he went, yeah, and all that, like, did he need to? I don't know. Maybe he did. But I think, yeah, you could just fool that on, you know, like, hey, point the gun here and we'll just make believe that it went straight.
Yeah. My biggest problem with his character was not something Will Smith did, but was a piece of the story, which is when Enchantress is showing everybody their truest desires at the end and they're all thinking about what it is they want. I thought a lot of those were really off. But the fact that we saw him killing Batman, I didn't think that this film led us to that point. I didn't feel like that was justifiable. I wanted to see him picturing himself with his daughter, because that should be his truest desire. And you could take the leap to say, if he kills Batman, Batman's out of this world, and that means that he's able to do what he needs to do in order to provide for his daughter by killing other people, and Batman will come after him, and blah, 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 blah. But really,
that in itself was the longest explanation ever.
Exactly. But that's me saying I'm bringing my own backstory to this. Right. I don't want to have to do that for a film. I want you to show me that at the end of the day, what he wants is to be sitting with his daughter. Because that's what you told me the whole film. But now you're showing me that his truest desire is to kill Batman? Well, that doesn't seem motivated. We don't even know what Batman did to him. We can guess. We saw that one scene. But we really don't know. So I didn't like that choice at all.
Yeah, and it seemed like he was blaming Batman for his problems. When he was beyond the daughter, he was not one to – he was honest with himself. And this was not him being honest with himself in the sense that, oh, Batman's the cause of all my problems.
Right.
So I agree with you there.
But not a Will Smith acting problem. That was a story problem. Will Smith nailed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was a fun fight scene. And I think he kind of talked about, like, going on set and, you know, that he looked forward to fighting with Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fun scene to film for them.
Yeah.
Which is always fun to, you know, I mean, take Will Smith and Ben Affleck, the fact that they both get excited, like, oh, dude, I get to do a scene with Will Smith or Ben Affleck, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is so freaking awesome.
Because most people, you know, unfortunately, they get so jaded and they're like, okay, let's do this. But when you can still have that in you, it's great.
Mm-hmm. It's cool that they did an action scene together because they have worked together before in Jersey Girls. So yeah. If you can remember that movie. But that was like a more emotional kind of dramatic scene that they were together. So to have the flip side of being together and being just like badass boys filming an awesome action scene.
Yeah.
That must have been fun.
I agree. We sort of talked about Jared Leto and the Joker, but let's sort of really dive into it.
I was looking the other day about Jared Leto because he'd been cast for a while, and I didn't remember that they actually offered the role to Ryan Gosling at first.
That would have been weird.
Would have been very interesting. And they offered Harley to Emma Roberts. So can you imagine if that's the movie that we saw there? Tom Hardy, Ryan, Emma. Like,
I don't think Emma would have, like, she was, we'll talk about Nerve today as well on Anatomy of a Movie, but I don't think she was good in that movie, but she doesn't have the acting chops to pull off a role like Harley.
Yeah,
sad to say.
It's just interesting to think. But about Jared Leto, I feel like he did a very good job. We know how hard he prepared for this role and did some weird things, sending condoms and rats and whatnot to other people, which is
method.
Totally method. I hate that people are knocking his performance. I don't think that's fair. We didn't see enough of him.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember watching the film, I was like, we only got a handful of scenes with Joker. And for such a big villain and such an iconic character, I was expecting more. And then to find out later that they did cut a lot, I think that's very unfortunate. But allows the audience to get excited to see more of him in future movies. I get that. But I think his portrayal was great because we've seen so many Jokers. And I think he was very standalone. I can remember this type of Joker.
I honestly, I don't know why people think like he didn't do the short amount of time that we got him. I thought he did fantastic. Like he ate the scene, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is more of a movie thing. I knew the Joker could not be dead when that helicopter crashes, and Harley's sad about it. It's like, well, no. Unless I see him dead, he's not dead.
Yeah. And even then, we see Superman dead, and we know he's not staying dead. So in comic books, these characters are coming back.
Absolutely.
I did really think that he made the Joker his own. People said that he stole Heath Ledger's voice. It was different. There were moments and things that he borrowed from different characters and played homage to different characters, and even Jack Nicholson and all different Jokers that have been. But I think people's bigger problem is that they don't like this version of the Joker. They don't want him to be a club owner. They don't want him to have grills. They don't, whatever it is, they don't like the aesthetics of it. Well, keep in mind, people, that that's not Jared Leto's choice. That has nothing to do with his performance. That's a decision that was made by the rest of the people around him. So I think that, yeah, and Jared Leto seems to be very bitter about this too. He's come out and he said, listen, I filmed a lot more. I gave a lot more. They didn't use some of my performances. There was enough, he said there was enough footage to make a Joker standalone movie. That's how much they filmed him. That he said, he quote, this is a quote from him. He said, if I die tomorrow, maybe they would release the Joker standalone movie because that's how much footage they have. Which, by the way, is a little bit in poor taste after what happened with Heath Ledger, I thought. But
in this a little bit.
But he did say that's how much they really did film. So
I think it's a little bit of hyperbole, but I at the same time, I understand that they probably shot a lot more than they put in.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And a lot of that was more of his backstory with Harley Quinn, which I do eventually want to see. But keep in mind, Harley Quinn is maybe getting a standalone movie. You don't think the Joker's backstory and her backstory is going to be part of that? You don't think we have 10, however many more films that we have, and we're not going to see any of that footage?
To be honest, if they threw in another effing backstory in this goddamn movie.
Really?
The first 30 minutes was all about, all right, let's introduce Deadshot and Margot Robbie. And then, okay, then here comes Amanda Waller. And hey, let me get out my book and show you. Then we're going to start with Will Smith and then Margot Robbie.
But we're not going to introduce Slipknot because we're going to kill him, so we're not spending time on that. Giveaway.
And then, by the way, when Joel and Rick Flagg and Amanda Waller come into the prison, oh, what are we going to do? Let's introduce, once again, Will Smith and Margot Robbie. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and I think that kind of hurt the movie, too, because it was very repetitive. It's like, we already got that, the same beats over and over again, which, I mean, it wasn't a long movie. But I think they kind of did that for maybe creative purposes, especially today. I feel Margot Robbie's definitely becoming a bigger name.
Huge.
And I think that maybe that took a good decision of why they showed more of Harley Quinn and Margot Robbie in this film compared to more Jared Leto.
Not his movie. He's not. It's called Suicide Squad. He's not in the Suicide Squad. Jared Leto, the Joker, has never been and is not a member of the Suicide Squad, Harley.
You don't know if he wants to be in the Suicide Squad or not.
I'm saying in this story, what we saw, he's not part of the Suicide Squad. So everybody who's saying, well, why wasn't he in the movie as much? Well, because it's called Suicide Squad. He's not. I mean, to me, it's just so obvious why he's not in it more. But if people make up your minds because people want more of his performance, but then they don't like his performance. So which one is it? You know what? Everybody's going to complain about the Joker. We knew it was coming.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it's one of those things. I forget who I was talking about, but you know, there's going to be that like 10% of your audience is going to be so freaking vocal. But at the end of the day, it just represents 10% of your audience.
Mm-hmm.
So just make a good movie. And yes, in the nicest of ways possible, forget about the 10%.
Yeah, that's true. How did you guys feel about Viola's performance?
I love Viola Davis. I think she's a phenomenal actress and obviously award-winning. I think she was so cold and calculated. I was like, who the hell is this chick?
Mm-hmm.
But she was so cool because she was put in a position of power where she had control over the most craziest guys in the planet. And I think it was so cool that she was just, she was calm throughout, and I couldn't trust her. And I actually enjoyed it because I found she was way more unpredictable than a lot of these characters.
I liked her for that sole reason. I mean, anytime you have one of these movies, as I mentioned, what they did well was you have to have one of the good guys be worse than the bad guys. And she certainly nailed that perfectly. And to your point, Marissa, yeah, Roxy knows quote all too well. You want to see a real person, put them in a position of power, and she showed her true colors. You know, and the weird part was that she was kind of nice towards the end, where she let them have their espresso machines and BET. I never even understood that quote, by the way.
BET,
I was like,
one?
Well, I never heard. I was like, what did he say?
Oh, I'll get to that in a second. But on Amanda Waller. Amanda Waller is a very famous comic book character in the DC universe. She's huge. And she was on the TV show Arrow, and what happened was when the movie decided that they were going to use Amanda Waller, they pulled a lot of the Arrow characters, a lot of the TV characters, even though they're set on different Earths. They said, listen, you got to kill off that character. We want to use that character, and we don't want it to be muddied by the usage of it on television. So they very abruptly killed Amanda Waller. And I was really upset because I love this character. So I needed Viola Davis's performance to kick butt. So it just had that much more weight for me because I really wanted her to nail it. Mm-hmm. And I love her, and I've loved her in everything. And I watch her show, and I've seen her movies. And to me, this performance was pretty close to perfect. She wasn't in that much of it, and her storyline was a little wonky at times, like them coming to save her, us not knowing who was in there, that being supposed to be a big reveal, but it was kind of like, maybe that fell flat. But her performance, how cold she was when she just shoots everyone dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the look on her face and whatnot, I thought she did a really, really great job. And I have seen some negative things about her, too, saying that this was one of her weaker performances. And I don't understand that because
she's phenomenal.
She worked with what she was given. And she was stoic, but she was also, like Amanda Waller, willing to give when she needed to give. And that was the way that she was able to get these people still on her side. No matter how evil she actually is, you want to work with her because she is in a position of power to be able to give you the things you want, such as BET. Now let's talk about that for a second, because this was...
Now this is not you saying you hate BET. Let me just make that clear.
I don't understand. It's very challenging as a white female to talk about this, but I feel as if they gave an inappropriate portrayal of Killer Croc in this movie, and that was a racist line, in my opinion. Why wouldn't they have him say something like, I want Animal Planet.
I want HBO.
Wouldn't that be... Yeah, whatever it is. I just didn't like the way that they portrayed this character. And it felt to me like they were pushing something that wasn't there with him. And I also had a problem with his... He had such a big head and such a little body. And I don't know.
Crocodiles kind of are like that. They have big heads.
Not like
you should get Animal Planet.
Sure, yeah, I should. He should too. Like that's, I just didn't like it. I thought that they didn't do a good job.
I just didn't hear it. I was like, what did he say?
But why? Yeah. Why is that what he's saying?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense. He's a crocodile.
Well, because his real name is, what is it, Wayne something?
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense in this story.
I understand. It's a very racist assumption to be like, oh, because he's black. Originally, he wants to watch BET.
It's a small thing, but I didn't like the move. I found it inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I just did.
I'm sure BET kind of likes it, though.
You think?
It's good promotion for them. Sure,
listen,
why not?
BET is the one who put after the billboards with Madonna's thing. They're like, we saw that. Come watch us.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, goodness.
So, like, I don't think they're against any sort of publicity.
Okay.
I didn't understand Killer Croc just for character story, because we didn't get a lot of screen time with him. Again, not knowing the background and backstory to him. And every time we saw him, he basically had one line that we could hardly hear. And I didn't know where he fit into the Suicide Squad.
He wasn't supposed to. He's not originally in the Suicide Squad. It's a different character, and it's King Shark, and he is we saw him on Flash TV show, but David Ayer didn't want to put him in because he's an all CGI character, and he wanted to have an actor in there. But I thought that transition wasn't justified. It was weird. I would have rather see what was supposed to be there or a great portrayal of Killer Croc, which we didn't get. So it was a weird move.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to remember, like, what purpose he had during the whole showdown.
Well, he swam through the water. Well, here's the... I don't know.
But
I'm surprised
anyone could swim.
And he swam through the water, and Enchantress can sense that they're behind the whatever, but she can't sense that he's underneath her. I mean, what?
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out, like, okay, he has to have a shining moment in this movie.
Well, here's the thing. I agree with you.
Didn't really get that.
I agree with you, didn't have a shining moment. But if you asked me from the get-go which one of these is the most valuable person... If this was like after school, like we're picking teams, I would pick Killer Croc as opposed to Harley Quinn, who just has a bat.
Well, Harley Quinn is the only one who isn't really a meta-human. I mean, even Deadshot, who's got the thing, and he, like, kind of... I mean, I guess you could argue
that Boomerang. I would even pick Killer Croc over Boomerang. Again, just logistics, kind of, like...
Well, they really underutilize Boomerang's powers here. Like, you've got somebody who can throw that thing and kill somebody, but instead of using him, we're going to use El Diablo to burn the place down. Like, why doesn't Boomerang, just from where he is, start chopping people?
Well, he had a drone. That was his purpose, was the drone.
Yeah. But, like, he flew a boomerang with a camera in it. It's like, oh, great, now we can spy on them.
Yeah.
And that was about it.
Rest in peace, El Diablo.
Oh.
I miss him.
But El Diablo was awesome. So his good. Moment.
Yeah, he was so,
like,
good.
He was the only one who was actually strong enough and actually could have, and, like, to pair up with that brother and actually have come somewhat of a showdown, I enjoyed it.
I'm not positive that we needed El Diablo's character to grow in size like that, though. It was interesting that we've seen him get angry and fiery before and not seen him grow like that. That was an interesting choice, but, again, not an actor thing. He nailed it.
Okay, so I one of the things I do want to commend him, the finale, like the ultimate how we get rid of the Enchantress, I thought worked really well, because rather than have... someone, now they have to, like, go triple in size in some sort of weird way. It was just Harley, and she fooled me, at least, and was like, okay, I'm going to go with the Enchantress. That sounds all good. But no, instead, I'm going to rip her heart out.
She fooled me, too. That was a stronger moment for me, because you never know with Harley's character.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what she's capable of, and they did such a good job building to that point of saying to us, hey, you can't trust this girl. You cannot trust this girl. And then that moment where she made best friends with the squad, it was cool to see her rip the heart out.
Yeah, and it's just great that the fact that you can end a fight on such a big moment, but without all the action of, like, boo, boo, boo.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And not.
But then we did have the, you know, shooting at the end.
Yeah, that's true.
The explosion, because you have to have one big explosion at least.
Always. And not to be the huge feminist in the room and keep bringing it up, but watching two women face off each other against each other at the end there, it was really cool. It's cool.
You guys would rip each other's hearts out.
I was just
going
to say that.
You?
I was like, it was cool to see if another female, like, actually take out another female, because we don't really get that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Especially in a comic book.
Except in real
movie.
Life when you guys have cat fights.
Yeah, but we don't rip each other's heart out. We rip each other's hair out.
Come on.
Oh, I'm just saying, there's plenty of girl-on-girl violence.
It was very unexpected of Harley Quinn, and that's why I was like, yeah, okay, she's cool. In that sense.
Yes.
I agree.
You cool, girl.
He's
you're
like,
cool.
All right.
You get some
you
props.
Earned your place.
And then her pudding comes and breaks her arm.
Aw, pudding.
Any other story stuff that you guys want to talk about before we move on to some of the more production aspects of things?
No. If I think of anything, I'll throw it in there.
All right. Any fun Easter eggs that you guys kind of also saw? I mean, there's articles upon articles of just Easter eggs.
Here's one that I like that I didn't know about, because I've read Harley comics for a while, and I know more about Harley, but I didn't know her origin story. So Tom Dini, who's one of her Paul Dini, who's one of her creators, was watching Days of Our Lives, and there was a girl on the show named Arlene Sorkin, who now voices Harley, and she was in some dream sequence as a clown, like similar to the way that Harley looks in a lot of the comics. And he was like, wow, I feel like this is very Harley. And he, if you can pull up the YouTube link and you can watch it, but she literally looks like an early version of Harley. And it's so bizarre. But it's from a soap opera, which blew my mind that was a thing. I loved that little bit.
As women, what did you guys think of the outfit for Harley Quinn? Because obviously Margot has gone on record saying that, like, she didn't feel 100% comfortable in it. Like, she could have gone with the clown costume rather than, like, booty shorts or whatever.
Yeah, I felt this, her character wardrobe-wise, just physicality-wise, I think it was very objectified for women. It's like, there were shots where they purposely had her change in front of all the guys, and, like, the slow pan out, and you can see the whole body shot of Margot Robbie. Granted, she's gorgeous. We know that. There were moments that were strictly objectifying her, and that made me angry.
Harley Quinn has been a sexualized character since her origin. She has always been this character, and if you want to stay true to the comics, then this is absolutely how to do so. So I understand why people are upset, but this is something that she would wear. This is a way that she would act. This is who she has always been. So to change this aspect of her would be because we're trying to be more PC, because we're trying to make a statement, but it would not be being true to who the character is, which is why I think that there has been such polar opposite opinions on whether this is good or bad. Really huge comic book fans wanted to see this version of Harley. And people at home that have children are like, no, I don't want that. But that's why I made a very strong point at the beginning. This is not a female role model. This is not a statement like, hey, kids, dress like this and be a bad guy. That's cool. No, this character is out of her mind crazy. Not who you aspire to be. Not someone to look up to. That is made so clear to me. So it's not like we have somebody dressing like this who's the next president of the United States. And it's like, girls, in order to do well, you need to dress like this. Like, if you want to be crazy, all right, then dress like this.
Fair enough. Last question. I just thought of this. What the hell was the vat of whatever the hell that was?
Mm-hmm. This is one of the Joker has many origin stories, and the vat of chemicals is one of them, where that's how he became the Joker. And a lot of the versions of the Joker doesn't even remember how he became the Joker, because that's how crazy he really has become. But it's about a vat of chemicals, and he falls into a vat of chemicals, and that's how Harley is made also, because if you know Harley's backstory, she has a doctorate. And she is like this normal girl, which we saw those flashbacks of her being this beautiful blonde Harleen Quinzel and like totally a bombshell who falls for this guy. And then her turning into Harley Quinn going through the vat of chemicals. Now, I don't know what kind of chemicals don't leave you with scars and just like completely torture your body and you come out and you're just a little paler than when you went in. Apparently these chemicals. But that's what's going on there. That's how they transitioned into who they became and those villains.
I think it's very strange because the coloring of it, you know, like just the melting of the clothes and what, I don't know.
Yeah, that's straight from the comics, one version of an origin story. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they use chemicals, which is such a physical property, to change something so mentally drastic within a character rather than physically.
Interesting. That's Jack Nicholson's backstory was with chemicals too, though. Not Heath Ledger's, although we never quite got what Heath Ledger's was. He made up like 50 different things, so maybe.
There's a great little YouTube series called Film Theory that I like to watch every now and then, talking about right now, like the origin of the Joker. It's gonna be a two-parter, so I don't know what actually happens.
I mean, that will be awesome to watch because there really isn't one. There's so many. And then the Joker is such a joker, aka a liar, that there's stories that never could have happened. And he's a war vet in some of them and all different things.
Well, check it out. Check out those videos because, yeah, they're actually fun. All right, so let's move on to production.
Why are you sighing about production? Are you sad about it?
In some ways, because we could talk about the costuming and whatnot, but why don't we jump a little bit ahead, if we will, and because a lot of people are citing this in terms of the campaigns and the promotions, right? We talk a lot about that on the show, but I thought it was one of the most brilliant promotions for a movie ever.
How come?
I just think it resonated really well with people. It's just it seemed fun. Right, and that's why I was expecting it to be fun, was because the way the music in the trailers and whatnot, and they did include a bunch of the one-liners, so I thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a fun thing. And I think a couple of things happened when you had mentioned when Batman v Superman didn't pan out the way that it should have, or they were expecting it to, then a lot of pressure then got onto this movie that wasn't there before. I feel. And so then, therefore, okay, this was going to be the big movie. And then when the reaction hit based on the trailers, they're like, oh, we have something here that can do really well. And then they made the shift of, okay, the company that edited the trailer, why don't we have them also do the movie? And I get you want to reward people for their work. Maybe not the right use of that.
Interesting.
How'd you feel, Marissa?
Well, I didn't feel that way at all. Because for, you know, photography and cinematography of this film, I thought, again, it was a dark film. Dark content, and the world looked dark and gritty. And it definitely reflected what the characters were and what they were going through. And I thought it was beautifully shot, though. There were so many cool composition shots that I was like, hey, how Deadshot set that one shot up and took out so many people in one shot. That was awesome. And it was just, like, so well planned. And, you know, the cinematographer for this movie, Roman Vasyanov, hopefully mm-hmm. I didn't butcher his last name, he's done a lot of dark films, too. You know, Fury and Thank You for Your Service, End of Watch. Those are dark movies, dark content. And I definitely felt that it was in that same type of genre.
Yeah, and briefly, speaking of Roman and therefore speaking of Fury, nobody's mentioned Scott Eastwood once when talking about this movie because, oh my God, was that boy in the smallest role of all time that we put him in. Like, he had actually three lines, and everybody for months and months was guessing who that character was going to be. And then he was, like, a random soldier that was in it for 2 minutes, which I thought was funny. But back to your point about the way this looked, I loved the colors. I loved the darkness. I loved the way this was shot. I thought it was cool. I thought it was weird. I thought that it said David Ayer also, the way that he directed and the way things looked. I enjoyed it. I did. I didn't find a problem with it not being bright enough. And with the marketing, I liked some of this color stuff. I didn't like the cereal box image that we had finally that had all of them as like Lucky Charms in there. I thought that was weird.
I didn't see that one.
But there were a lot of trailers and a lot of images and a lot of just snippets of videos coming in for this movie. And even me, who loves to get so much before, there was so much, Phil, so much going into this. I think people got tired of the marketing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody was like, okay, we get it. They're the bad guys, you know? Yeah. They just kept saying it over and over again. So I think people were maybe a little bothered by it.
Yeah. Well, I would say to Marissa's point, I thought between the cinematography and the way, like if you take out each of these sections, and I think that's what a lot of these trailers and promotions were, they're great standalone pieces. Mm-hmm. But I think the sum of the parts is whatever the damn term is. The sum of the parts is not the whole or something.
It's greater than.
Yeah. It's greater than.
Or less than. I don't know. You get what I'm saying.
Greater than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, again, if you took out, like, the opening scene introducing Deadshot and Harley Quinn were great. Did I need it six different ways? No, I didn't.
Yeah. I did like the visual shot of how Harley Quinn literally in those ribbons, what are bed sheets, that whole shot when they're
in the cage.
In the mm-hmm. cage. It was all white, it was bright. And white usually represents like purity, good. And it's completely not her character. So,
and she's blonde, like she's angelic.
And like the way that they set up like someone who's so crazy and morbid and dark as something that's all white in a white environment, like I think that added to the unpredictability of her character.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I thought that was really cool. And even by the end with the espresso machine, and we saw in some of the previews, like that became a big... Is it GIF or GIF? I never know. The GIF of her sipping on the espresso, and people kept writing things like,
I'm sipping mine too.
Yeah, exactly. So
Harley Quinn reading Harley Quinn.
even that, so like the all white, somebody who's sipping on their thing, the way that the marketing painted that, and even though those images in the film were really strong for me.
Yeah, I thought they worked well. I mean, what I'll give it a lot of credit, they used the colors really well, both in terms of production, costuming. And then I'll give them credit with even the filters of the actual, you know, the way they colorized it at certain times. Like when she is, Harley Quinn's going through her mind trips, there's that purple tone and it looks like she's high or whatever. I did enjoy that. The graphics themselves, when they like showcase all the people, I thought it was a little bit cheesy. I didn't need that portion of it.
Were you guys able to read some of the things?
It was so fast and so weird.
So fast. If you're going to do it, commit to it so that I can... I did like the choice, but I wanted them to commit harder so that for people who didn't know about these characters, they could actually learn about them. Because isn't that why you're putting up all these words and things that people have done?
Exactly. I liked it visually because it was... you know, cool to look at. Unfortunately, we couldn't read everything. But what was going through my mind was, like, we were having the overload of music per character. So, like, to get their just emotional tone. But also that there were probably, if you think about it, there were screenshots. You could pretty much screenshot every character during the introduction, use them as, like, trading cards or something. Mm-hmm. So graphically, it was cool. But visually, as a video filming, not so much.
Are we too old? Maybe. Is this for the YouTube generation?
Oh, I liked it. I liked it. Graphic so I'm design, young.
There's a difference between graphic good graphic design and good video film.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I say that because maybe for the audience in terms of how young they were, you know, it's a PG-13 movie as opposed to an R-rated, which we haven't yet to fully talk about. But maybe it plays to them. Just in terms of the Rick Flag one, they had, I think it had the least amount. But on there it said, like, has a handicap of 3 in golf. And then they had the sound effect of the, you know, the putter hitting the, you know, the golf ball. So they put a lot of thought into it. But, again, it was just sensory overload between the text and the music and the sound effects. It's just and the dialogue. It was just so much.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. Visually looked cool. Had it been more than 10 seconds...
You need to make a stronger choice. Either don't include it or include it, but live by it and say, this is our way of letting you into our world, which I didn't think they did either. But I did like the idea.
I'm trying to think, like, I forget if Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels had kind of a version of that. And I think they did. I don't know if they use graphics, but typically, like, you don't want to go more than 3 things. And this was just...
Rule of threes.
Going back to Killer Croc, you had Killer Croc, you had his name, you had this, blah, 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 and just too much text.
I didn't know where to look, and that's the biggest problem. When it comes up, I'm like, okay, am I supposed to be memorizing his face, his name, the things about him, his backstory? Is that a pink unicorn I see? Like, there was just...
Oh, what the hell was up with the pink unicorn? To make a side tangent, what is that?
I don't have the answer for you. Okay. I don't have the answer.
He was very
into it.
There's
been a lot of commentary on it. Some people say it's an actor thing. Some people are saying directorially that was a choice. I don't know. I kind of liked it. It was quirky. It was weird. I'm not sure.
I don't remember a unicorn in it because it went by so fast.
He keeps using the Jack Courtney's character he keeps the pink unicorn in his jacket and keeps like picking it up.
Oh,
and it
was that one. Yeah. Yeah.
It was weird. But you guys
think it had a payoff to it.
No, not really.
There's no payoff.
You guys keep mentioning the music and not loving that. Can we get into the music a little bit?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll say this for my own, and then you can get into it. Yeah. It's not that I hated the music. We could literally list all of this. This is like 3 movies of music combined into one.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm a big fan of music as well. But for a film, and especially the first 10 to 15 minutes of how they introduced this movie, I clearly remember thinking, I was like, okay, we had this awesome composition score from the actual composer for the movie, and then it immediately goes into a recognizable mainstream song, and then to introduce Deadshot. And then we went into a different song to introduce Harley Quinn, and then a different song for this person. It was song after song after song in the first 15 minutes. I'm like, oh my God, can we just get back to regular score, please?
What's so interesting about that is that hearing CCR and hearing AC/DC and hearing Eminem and hearing the White Stripes, I really felt like they were giving each one of these characters an individual tone, and I loved it. So it's really an unpopular opinion that I have here because I know most people thought it was sensory overload with all the music switching, but I felt that I got a sense of every one of these characters with that because I really didn't get it from the graphic and being able to read it, but we got a song for each person and I was like, oh, this person's like a little sexier and smoother. Oh, this person's edgier and rockier. So I thought that was a really cool choice. I would have liked to see that music get used full circle and then kind of bring it back and have people have more theme songs. And when this person's doing something that's really awesome, we bring back in their song kind of thing. But we didn't really touch back on it. And that was my bigger problem. If we're going to do that, if everybody's got their tune, then let's use that. Let's really go for it. Again, make a stronger choice there.
I get what they were doing. We're trying to, like, get this person is this kind of tone in X, Y, and Z. But, and I think, you know, the Without Me and Bohemian Rhapsody at the end, I think they were nicely placed throughout the film. My problem was the first 10, 15 minutes, it was just too much back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it got old really fast.
I love the idea that knowing who the people are, I wanted your favorite song, not your entire iPod. Mm. This is how I would describe that.
Got it. Yeah. So, I agree with that. Okay.
You know. I'm a big fan of score, and like after the initial introduction of characters, I don't remember the music that much. And yet when Eminem Without Me came on, then it was like another moment. But once they really get into the city, and to me, until Bohemian Rhapsody comes at the end, I don't remember anything in terms of music. And that's why it did feel kind of a little bit dead at that certain point. But again, that's why, like, when you have people who edit trailers, like, in a trailer, typically, in 2.5 minutes, you have about 5 to 6 song changes. That doesn't necessarily apply to movies.
Yeah.
Like, imagine for a 2-hour movie how much music that would actually be if you followed that logic.
But in their trailers, they had their Bohemian Rhapsody trailer, and then it was that song the whole time. So their trailers, both of them, I think, had one song the whole time.
So they broke convention. They did it backwards.
Yeah. Most trailers have at least 3 different songs.
Hmm. Okay. Most have like 6.
Usually. Oh, yeah, and then they had the You Don't Own Me. But they had a smaller amount in the trailers.
It's a great version of that song.
Yeah, it was cool. So good. It was really cool.
Yeah, you know what's fun? Like, dissecting trailers is actually really fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing.
They're fun to edit as
done
well.
Way too... No, they're not.
They can be.
It's like a 6-month ordeal. Trust me. Now, Rox, you were over at Comic-Con this year.
I was.
Anything that you got to glean from the Suicide Squad stuff there, or just Warner Brothers in general?
Yeah, they had a whole thing over at the Hard Rock. They also, a lot of the Comic-Con backpacks were Suicide Squad. They were really doing it up. They had a secret screening there. They gave a full force to DC and Suicide Squad, although Geoff Johns was not present as much as we thought he would be, and he was very shortly after announced as the head of DC and all these projects. So it was interesting. It was interesting. Are you just asking about it was like there?
That and also, you know, because I know obviously Comic-Con is huge promotion for them, and I know in 2015 they utilized that to kind of build the movie up.
Yeah, it was for me though. It was almost like, okay, Suicide Squad, that's happening so short after this. Here's our presentation. Here's our stuff. You know to see it already. We've already done promotion. Now let's talk about Wonder Woman and Justice League. Like, that's really what they were focused on, because we had those two trailers. One of them is a sizzle, the other is a trailer, but of Wonder Woman and Justice League. So they were trying to say, like, look forward, look over here. We know you know about Suicide Squad, so we'll show you all this stuff. But look over here, this is what we have ahead. Because of all of the internal changes they've made by pushing Snyder a little bit aside, bringing Ben Affleck on as an EP of all of these things, making Geoff Johns the head, they're saying, listen, guys, we know you didn't love Man of Steel. We know you didn't love BBS. We know you didn't love Suicide Squad. This is our course correction right now. So let's show you how that's going to be implemented in Wonder Woman. Let's show you how that's going to go in Justice League. Suicide Squad, we already finished. Like, that already happened. So
let's give you something new to talk about.
Yeah, shiny toys, shiny toys.
Something exciting.
The Captain Lou.
Exactly.
The whole thing.
Yeah, they're Roxy
Lazarus. Marissa knows a little bit, but Roxy at this point knows the whole history.
Check out Captain Lou on YouTube, and then you can be part of the inside joke too.
But I think check out the Tomorrow Show basically every single episode.
Yes,
because
that's true.
I don't think
that's a better thing to plug. The show.
Well, not even that. I don't think people would understand Captain Lou in terms of the whole idea is basically just not blinking. And if things don't go your way, act like it never happened.
Right.
It's essentially the what the
So yeah, that's kind of what they're doing. Like, okay, we did these three movies and they all got 20% or something on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, by the way, look over here. Wonder Woman, you guys loved her. It's Gal. She's so pretty.
Like, well, unfortunately, we're not going to look. Speaking of that, it's a good segue into it. Let's talk about Rotten Tomatoes. And for the first time that I can recall, a petition to shut down Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
I know. I agree with that, but also, come on, people.
I know. Really?
Because the critics don't like the movie you like, you want to shut down the site? What?
Okay. What? Couple of things. Necessary. The petition started before the movie was publicly available. So it's like, okay, it's one thing to disagree with critics if the movie had already come out and you'd seen it and you have your own opinion. But to say, hey, critics, your opinion sucks because it's not what we're anticipating the movie to be, I don't think is a justifiable way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, although Fandango took over the majority of Rotten Tomatoes, Warner Brothers still has a frickin' stake in Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's true. The critics are that. I think critics are just that. They're critics. So you know what to expect from them. They're going in. They're looking for certain things. If they don't get those things, they're going to give it a bad review. People need to keep in mind that Rotten Tomatoes works differently than you think it does. You don't give it a percentage as a critic. That just means that 26% of critics thought that it was worse than it was good. They gave it a negative instead of a positive. So even if they're giving it a 49 in their minds, even if it's just a slightly edging on worse, it just goes to bad. So 26% of the critics didn't like it. That's not saying that people gave it a 26%. It's very different.
Do you guys know how... Okay, I'm gonna try to drop a little bit of knowledge, and you guys let me know if it's actually interesting. If it's not, just tell me to shut the shut
Phil,
up.
Phil Speed Tech, drop the knowledge.
Okay.
Phil Speed Tech.
As a studio, you have the right to withhold certain reviews and request it, in fact, of Rotten Tomatoes to have them hold it, right? So if, for example, if on Monday of this week we were going to check out Sausage Party, there is a way
I saw that last night.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really good.
Very good. We'll talk about it next week. But in theory, if you checked of this Monday, it could have had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes because, studios can ask Rotten Tomatoes, hey, can you just put out these certain reviews? And that's why if you really check into it, it's got like only 12 reviews instead of the normal 200 for a big movie or 100 at least. Then by, I think it's around Wednesday because it has to be a 48-hour turnaround of when the movie comes out, then all the press has to be released, right? The embargo is over. And that's when you will start to then see the decline.
Mm.
I can't 100% verify because I wasn't like looking for it with Suicide Squad. But the fact that David Ayer, like the Friday before that Monday, was already like talking about reviews even though they weren't out, I think Warner Brothers was in on this in the sense of knowing how badly they were going to get bashed and were course correcting already.
As of the day that I saw it, which was the Tuesday before it came out, it had a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it was already doing very poorly. And Warner Brothers, you're right, Phil, they knew. They knew, they saw it. But what are you supposed to do at that point? The movie's in theaters. What do you do?
Leave it up
to... Make a better movie. I don't know.
I think they leave it up to the audience decision now, you know, and word of mouth. And to see, yeah, you had the critics, you know, reviews and their percentage, quote unquote, but then now just leave it up to the actual fans of the stories, of the characters, of movies.
Well, you do what you just said, but you also do a couple other things. Number one, you sell a lot of merch, which they have. You realize that you have a gold mine in Harley Quinn. People want to buy that merch. So they, in theaters, started selling a lot of different Suicide Squad stuff. You also let your actors do a lot of publicity. So people fall in love with these actors and they want to go see the movie they were in. Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jared Leto, all were hitting major, major outlets and their names were all over the place. So that's why, despite the negative reviews, people still went out to see this movie. And hey, I don't think Warner Brothers is caring that much right now. All right, it had 26%. They're laughing straight to the bank.
Well, yeah. I think the second weekend is going to be very telling because from Friday to Saturday, there's about a 60% drop in terms of ticket return.
Yeah, I think the super fans already saw it, and the second weekend, not going to be the strongest second weekend a movie's ever had.
So we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting.
Is it rewatchable? Do you think this film has a rewatchability factor to it?
Certainly much more than BVS.
I will rewatch it. No, I don't think it's particularly rewatchable.
Yeah, I was like, would people actually actively go back to the theater to rewatch it?
Yeah, I will.
Still have this money, this movie make money.
Mm.
It depends how much you have fun with the characters. Again, like, if you really love Deadshot or you loved Harley Quinn, then yeah, you can go back and you can have fun with it. I do think there is, again, it's short enough where it's only 2 hours. I think it could have been slightly shorter, but that's another story. Again, like, the fact that, I don't know, maybe there's a hangover effect from BVS where, like, I've already given that movie, like, 14 hours of my life probably that I don't want to enter too much into the universe, but this movie a lot more so.
Yeah.
I think people will. But it just depends. I mean, it's got a B+ on CinemaScore, so it's not an A, but it's not bad.
That's kind of how I felt about it. Yeah. It's not an A, but yeah, it's not bad.
I wouldn't give it an F, that's for sure.
Well, I don't think I've ever given any film an F unless it was absolutely atrocious. Is it a 26 on Rotten Tomatoes? I don't think so. I really want to know that side of it, how they fully do it, because it's not like there's an algorithm to it. No one at Rotten Tomatoes literally reads every single review and is like, oh, this is a 46 based off of this review. It's all, you know, so 26, that's, which, by the way, that is a score that makes it worse than Batman v Superman.
Yeah, and I think this movie was better.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to ask critics that. Like, do you really think that this movie is worse than that?
Martha.
Martha, Martha, Martha.
Martha, Martha, Martha.
Hey. So speaking of that, you had asked this before we went on. What our perceived lineup of quality, let's say, is in terms of the three movies. Mm-hmm. Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and now this. I don't know. What's the answer for you?
My favorite was Suicide Squad so far, and in the middle was BVS, and the one I liked the least was Man of Steel.
Interesting.
I have had a big problem with BVS and Man of Steel. My major BVS problem was the Martha stuff. My major Man of Steel problem was the dog and the dad stuff, which I just cannot get over.
A lot of people can't.
I just can't. So because of that, yes, I thought Suicide Squad, there were some things I didn't love, like Enchantress, like Killer Croc, but there wasn't one thing where I was like, I can't get over this, like the other two, and that's what puts it in first for me.
Nah, Marissa?
Interesting. You know what? I enjoyed Man of Steel, and yeah, there were some moments, but overall, I really liked Man of Steel. I liked the Superman story. I would put Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, then BVS, because BVS pissed me off.
Mm.
That made me angry.
Nah. Yeah, for me it's Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, then BVS.
So you guys have the same one?
Yeah.
Twinsies. Interesting, right? So speaking of how highly anticipated this was, this was nominated for anticipated movie. and then choice movie actor for anticipated movie as well with Will Smith. You know, and then Margot Robbie and Kara were chosen for the actress side of it. And it won in both the former and latter categories.
Huh.
I think that's good also because, you know, I think it's the teenage demographic that would be huge fans of these movies and these characters. So that's completely believable.
I love how the Teen Choice Awards, like, half the people that go there are, like, over 30. That's another story for another day. All right, so why don't we finish up let's finish up with sequels, because obviously there's that great stinger at the end, and we know we're heading into Justice League.
Yeah, we've got Wonder Woman, Justice League, Flash, Aquaman. That's the next 2 years of things that we have. We might be having another Batman movie.
Which Ben Affleck is supposedly set to direct.
There's supposed to be a couple of them that he's going to do. They now are talking about having another Superman movie. So by the credits that we saw, that was leading us into Justice League.
Is Batman the world's worst detective?
Why do you say that?
Because he can never figure out his own thing. He has to be handed the answer.
Well, I don't think so. I think he's great. But what was more interesting is the comment that Amanda Waller gives to Batman, which is about his night job, which would mean that Amanda Waller knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman, which puts us in an interesting spot here. So how many people know Batman is Batman? Who is Batman trying to recruit? We did see Flash even in this movie, which was awesome. But how does he do that? Who recruits who? Who's Wonder Woman recruiting? We're looking for Aquaman also. We've got all these moving parts. So that will be, it will be interesting to see if any of the Suicide Squad characters make their way over to the other movies like Batman did for this one or Flash did.
Well, we know Harley and the Joker are out of the jail. Or supposedly, yeah. Unless all of a sudden they get caught right as they're exiting.
And that's why Margot's pushing for a Harley movie, as she should.
Yeah. I think there's enough background and intrigue for the Harley character itself to flesh out a full movie.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Joker, and I think that's why they can stand alone, because they are just so well padded with storyline. That'd be fun to watch.
I definitely agree with that. Instead of us focusing, I mean, Green Lantern's going to happen because people want Green Lantern, but we haven't heard anything really about it, except that it's going to be a Green Lantern core movie, but like a buddy movie. And Shazam, which we don't know that much about, right now we should strike while the iron is hot. Harley is hot. Both, you know.
We get it.
Yeah, figuratively. But she is, so... Why don't we put our efforts into that movie? People want to see more Leto. People want to see more Margot.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Margot is great in Legend of Tarzan. Highly underrated movie. Just FYI, if you do want more Margot and in a different role.
She's great in all the movies that we've covered with Margot. See for Zachariah. Focus.
Very unknown movie. So there you have it. All right, final thoughts. Marissa, why don't we start with you?
Overall, it was fun. I enjoyed this because I admittedly... Superman is my favorite character, and we didn't see him, and he's dead, but he's coming back. So, and I don't really know the Suicide Squad character, so I was very interested into, like, seeing these nice, fun, well, they're not nice, but, you know, fun characters that I don't know of. And they were fun to watch all these adventures, and I would probably see another Suicide Squad movie if they came out with one.
Jared Leto just announced that he really would like to see the Joker and Superman do a movie together. So that seems like it's totally up your alley.
So for that.
Yeah, that would be cool. In general, I think this is a movie that is worth seeing in theaters. I don't want people to be turned off by the incredibly bad Rotten Tomatoes score, because make up your own mind. If you are a DC fan, you'll definitely find aspects of this that you really enjoy. So that's a good thing. There's great chemistry between Margot and Will. Some of the character choices are really strong. You got to go into this with some popcorn so you can laugh at the parts that are painfully bad, like Enchantress. And if you do that, then I think you'll be all set.
All right. Well, I think final judgment for me will pass when Wonder Woman comes out, of whether or not Warner Brothers can actually make a superhero movie. They've in some ways gotten better and better. This is a much improved effort, certainly. But it remains to be seen fully how well they can do it. That's my opinion. But overall, you know, it was enjoyable enough. Not the most raving review in the world, but a B. I would give it a B. Not a B+, but a B.
Okay.
So there you have it. Thank you guys for joining us. As always, for more, you can follow us at The Popcorn Talk on Twitter and Instagram and all that. Also, Roxy, as mentioned, does DC movie news here on the network, so catch that.
Yeah.
Every Thursday. Not quite every Thursday, but almost every Thursday.
Yeah, Thursdays at 3 p.m. always.
As the eyes roll. And you can catch Marissa at Serafini TV.
That's right.
And that's about it. We'll be doing Nerve. That's a fun movie, so check that out. Also, we did Batman v Superman, so worth going down the vault there. I think we did Man of Steel back in the day.
Well,
So, you know, definitely get your fix of DCEU. What a weird abbreviation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got Sausage Party coming out soon, War Dogs, Pete's Dragon, all that fun stuff, and all the movies that we mentioned, Wonder Woman. Hopefully we're still around when they'll come out, which I...
What do you mean?
I'm willing to bet we will be. All right, guys, we'll see you next time on another Anatomy of Movie.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.